He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council
hey,
back
buddy.
There. It's a morning of celebration.
You want to say all those words again?
No. Plumley.
I think there was a brunch beverage and like a European dictator traded yesterday.
Yeah, that's basically what
NBA.
It feels like. Hey, lots of guys in the NBA were traded for lots of equity. That's how the next hour is going to read.
Okay. As long as it wasn't Kristaps.
Yeah, we'll see. The day is still young. He's Braden Gall. You hear those sweet, sweet vocals. That means he's back. And with us, we are back to full strength off of the penalty kill. We got through a couple of days without you. We missed you, buddy.
Oh.
How was
you had some 5-on-3s?
Yep. Didn't score. Didn't score either.
Like the Predators, you didn't score on 5-on-3s. No, it's great. It's just such an amazing event. I love it. I know Julian's a big fan. I know you don't care. I asked you and implored with you and pleaded with you and begged for you to just check it out. I don't know if you did or not.
So I tried. There was this effort.
There were two great baseball games on Saturday.
I turned the beginning on, and they were talking, and then one of those ads came on for the on the broadcast came on for the Lakers Celtics 30 for 30, and I was like, you know what, they were doing the pregame thing, so I was like, I'll just watch a little of this and then I'll come back to it. I never got back to it.
I watched the entire thing
back to back.
I've seen the first one and like the first 30 minutes of the second part of that, so it is spectacular.
Yeah, I've seen all of it.
I cannot deny that 30 for 30 is spectacular, especially for some of us like me who just barely missed it. I caught like the tail end of it as like a 5, 6, 7 year old. I caught the 87 series as a kid. So I didn't really live through a lot of it like a lot of people in this country did. And so I learned a lot. I mean, I learned a lot about the history of both organizations and sort of, you know, the fact that Bill Russell was actually the first ever African-American coach in any professional sport. That was all. So I don't blame you because it was a spectacular documentary, but you could have kind of watched that anytime.
You're right.
And I begged you just to watch, like, the Florida State LSU game was a great game. Oregon State Cal State Fullerton on Saturday was a great game. And our audience doesn't care about any of those four schools, maybe LSU, but it was just great baseball. And it's fathers and sons, it's group trips, it's grandmas, it's just such a fun event. And I ate a lot of good food. That's really why I love going out there. You just kick back, you watch baseball, and you eat great food. The steak in that city is spectacular.
My heart
needs like a lot of arugula salads for the next couple of weeks.
It's very specific salad.
Yeah,
to go
just
with
arugula.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I want it to be very aromatic. I'm gonna have to detox. Like when you go to New Orleans, you know, there's certain cities you have to come back and detox from,
right?
And not from drinking. Like, you've got to detox from the butter and the grits from New Orleans. You've got to detox from, like, the filet mignon from Omaha, because it's just so much steak all the time. Steak. I had steak for breakfast one time.
Steak and baseball.
Oh, my God. There's so much good food in that city. Very underrated.
Good. Well, and Julian Council is celebrating this morning as well, as we celebrate as a show. I've never seen Julian Council come in with theme music this morning, and when he came into the office, his phone was cranking Celebrate.
This also looks like what would have been his, like, sixth grade yearbook picture.
Oh,
like,
that's
this is
point.
How he was dressed in his sixth grade yearbook picture.
He's too busy dancing. He is wearing a Charlotte Hornets shirt.
Circa.
And vintage Hornets.
And the jacket?
The jacket is one of those.
97-ish?
Yeah. You know, like the thin material.
Yeah.
Strange. What is that? Teal and purple? We're going to call that teal and purple?
Teal and purple, baby.
Okay.
Teal and purple. Woo! Celebrate that Plumlee's gone.
That's the sort of joy that basketball news gives Julian Council. So.
That looks like an arena league team, like, puked on a jacket, and that's what you ended up with.
Oh,
football,
man.
Arena football.
At least my team's not in the nation's number one market and always irrelevant.
Yeah, and trying to trade their only valuable commodity.
This is what basketball has done to us, and we're gonna dip it. And it is funny because all three of us are basketball fans, and so this NBA period is very interesting. It's been amazing. For Julian, I'm starting to get mildly excited. Growing up a Lakers fan, you mentioned you missed that era. I stayed up late to watch those games as a kid. So I'm starting to get mildly, cautiously optimistic.
Were you like all in on the Kobe Shaq years? Like, okay, so you're a genuine.
I was a genuine fan. When I was a little kid, those Celtics Lakers series, I stayed up late to watch. Like, I got to stay up late to watch.
I've heard my beloved Raiders 4,000 times in like my whatever year relationship with you, 4 or 5 years that I've known you. And never I literally don't think I've ever heard you say, like, the purple and gold or Showtime or – I don't think I've ever heard you say anything about the Lakers.
Sunny made fun of me at that point for one when we first started dating. She's like, you're a Lakers fan, but you never wear anything Lakers.
Or talk about
and
it.
And I was – you know where that comes from? I moved as a kid from Vegas to Maine. And when you move from Vegas to Maine –
Was it Bangor?
No, it was Portland. Scarborough and Portland. Oh. But that is – in the middle of Celtics country, and I did that in 1990. So I moved from Lakers country to Celtics country, and it was just sort of...
Now Larry had a bad back by then.
But it was just sort of, you couldn't... I had a bunch of Lakers stuff as a kid. You couldn't wear that. You'd get beat up at school. So I didn't wear that then. And then I moved to a bunch of markets where basketball was just sort of irrelevant. So I've always been sort of the quiet one that watches. So
well, clearly, you moved D'Angelo Russell as part of that deal.
Yeah.
It seems pretty clear that Lonzo Ball is the answer to that. If you're going to go from a pass-first point guard to another pass-first point guard, it seems like Lonzo Ball is all but a done deal, which is still fascinating in and of itself, him going to L.A. in the first place.
I don't believe they ever bought into D'Angelo Russell anyway. I think they just, from the minute they drafted him.
Could have had Kristaps Porzingis.
Oh, God. See, and that's what's funny. So you got
Julian's
got all this hope because they got rid of some players. I've got all this
hope. And it's not because they acquired Dwight Howard, by the way. Like, it's not.
Oh, no, I'm happy about that. I'm mainly happy because we got one of the most untradeable contracts, which our GM ignorantly traded for, off the books. And Bellinelli, who we traded our first-round pick for last year. So happy.
Is that when you mix grapefruit juice with champagne?
No, that's we moved up in the draft.
That's the Bellini that I almost called him as I was reading too quickly. And then you've got, as a Knicks fan, you've got all the Porzingis battle that you're fighting right now. So it's a day of chaos. And funny enough, I didn't know this when we started talking about it yesterday, but I do want to make sure everybody knows the NBA draft will be right here on these airwaves tomorrow night. So obviously that's going to be on everybody's mind.
There's some good talent in that draft. Top 8-10 picks, they seem like pretty good players. There's guys in that draft that I would like on my team. Too bad they traded all their picks away.
Well, and you know, we've had the conversation with a couple of guys about what the top of the draft looks like, and there's the overwhelming opinion that a top 5 pick can get you a franchise changer. So it's going to be interesting to watch. Speaking of interesting to watch, new jerseys came out last night for the Preds. The Twitter reaction, I would not say, has been overwhelming, but I would also say this. Anytime something changes, the Twitter reaction is not overwhelming. So my question to you is, do you like the new design? Does it make any difference?
I need to see it on a human being skating around on the ice before I can make an official decision. There's a couple things I like about it. I like that it's cleaner, less piping and, you know, lines to it. I think making it cleaner looks good. I think it looks terrible in a picture on the internet. Like, I don't think it, you know, had I seen it in person and in during the unveiling in Vegas or wherever it was, you know, I think I might have felt differently. But when you see, like, two digital, like, layouts next to each other on the internet, it's hard to really tell. So I'm going to reserve judgment until I see somebody on the ice. I like some of the things that they've done, taking some of the piping away. They weren't going to change the logos because I don't think uniforms can do that. I think the teams are the only ones. I saw a lot of people saying, oh, thank God they didn't change the logo. I'm like, I don't think they're allowed to change the logo. So I think the Predators are the only people that can change the logo. So everything stayed the same there. I think generally I like simple, clean, and classic. And of course, I think here's the bottom line, and this is I've got to give credit to J.R. Lind for this because he basically tweeted it yesterday, and I wanted to make sure I got it right. If you're going to walk around in a bright gold, like if bright gold like jersey as a male adult walking around in public, you've already decided that's what you're going to do. I don't think you can really complain about all the other little things that go along with that jersey. You've already sort of bought into the gold. You're into the gold, in the gold we trust, all that stuff. Like, no one looks good in gold, so you just have to embrace it. And once you've done that, I don't think you can really complain about anything else. I think you sort of just have to roll with it. So I think it looks fine. You know, people were complaining about the collar. We'll see what it looks like. I think all the collars – I do love the tie. Like when you have the laces on the front of all the – some of the NHL jerseys have laces. That'd be cool to see the laces because the Predators had an old dark blue uniform that was all white and dark blue.
Right.
And it had the laces on the front, and I thought that was always really cool. So I'd like to see that at some point. But, you know, Adidas is not going to rock the boat too much, but they need to do it – they need to change it enough so that people will go buy it. I mean, that's just business. So – I thought it looked okay, but I need to see it like on a human being with pads skating around passing a puck on ice before I decide whether or not I love it or hate it.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest. We all knew the gold wasn't going anywhere because that's part of what makes Bridgestone unique, and that's part of what has become the signature of the franchise. And I love that it's still such a distinct gold. I love that they didn't go to some sort of a different shade of gold. I like the approach in what they did, but it's
from- when you pull up the whole all 31 uniforms, that one piece of that picture that came out yesterday that has all of them together. There's only one of them where gold's the primary color. I mean, the Blues have some trim of gold, blue, yellow, and the Pittsburgh Penguins have some trim of yellow, and there's a couple teams that have some trim of yellow, but the only one that is truly yellow or gold, like it gold in our case, but that color palette, you pull up that big picture of all 31 teams, there's only one that pops like that, that's that color. So in that sense, they've sort of branded themselves in a very unique way, which I think is good for the team and the sport.
And I will tell you, there's a jersey that broke my heart, and I hated it. I'll tell you about that. We'll do that next up. Plus, we need to get Braden's thoughts. We didn't get his thoughts yet on James Neal and Eric Decker, obviously possibly one guy leaving and definitely one guy coming in. We'll do all of that next up. But you guys know I made the switch to Xfinity, and I've been telling you about it all week. You need to know about it. It's not just Wi-Fi anymore. It's X-Fi. Xfinity has come in, and they've reimagined the way you Wi-Fi. So you got the fast speed. You still have the best speed all throughout the house. You still have all of the things you're used to, but now you get to personalize your experience. You can do it right from your tablet, your smartphone. You can change your passwords. You can also manage it from your TV. You can take a look and see who the data hog is. You know who's using all of the data. You can figure that out. Who's taking all the internet time? You can manage that. You can also see who's online when, where. You can get to all of that. You can manage the profiles. You're sitting at dinner. You want to have a nice family dinner. Everybody's on their phone. Bam! Press of a button. You can pause the entire network. You can make sure. Plus, you got kids. You can set parental controls and bedtime schedules to make sure your kids get to appropriate stuff at appropriate times. It's all there for you from Xfinity Wi-Fi, but now it's Xfinity XFi. I got an offer that ends for you June 30th. Requires enrollment to EcoBill paperless billing. Restrictions apply. Wi-Fi claim based on Xfinity gigabyte service router coverage and speed on a 5 gigahertz band. Offer valid for new customers only. Fees extra subject to change. After promo, regular rates apply. Free installation limited to standard installation on one outlet. Non-standard installation equipment taxes, fees extra. Here's what you need to do. Get started with Xfinity Internet for as low as $19.99 per month for 12 months. Xfinity Internet, perfect for everyone. So be sure to call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com. Make the switch to Xfinity Internet today and make sure to ask about new Xfinity Mobile, a new kind of network designed to save you money. Get up to 5 lines of talk and text included with Xfinity Internet service with no activation, no line access fees, plus 2 easy data options available so you can stream internet on the go and save along the way. Check out at Xfinity.com. Do it today. When we come back, Braden's thoughts on James Neal, Eric Decker, and I'll tell you about a jersey I hated more than any other. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So in an effort to make up for my awful update, I say that we distract everybody by giving away some free stuff. Really
early free stuff.
Early free stuff. So caller number 5, 615-737-1025. You're going to win a pair of tickets to the Southern Uprising Tour featuring Travis Tritt, Marshall Tucker Band, and the Outlaws at the Carl Black Chevy Woods Amphitheater at Fontenelle Sunday, July 2nd. So caller number 5, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5, going to get a pair of tickets, Southern Uprising Tour. Travis Tritt, Marshall Tucker Band, the Outlaws, that's out at Fontenelle, Chevy Woods Amphitheater, July 2nd. Should be a good time.
Don't be a joker and not call in.
I mean, you got to get that one. Travis Tritt alone would be interesting to see. So 615-737-1025, caller number 5. So we'll get to what you think about Neal and Decker in just a second, but I have to say okay. I could not have had more disappointment with
watching
Adidas.
Watching college baseball? Oh.
No. With Adidas and with the NHL over the terrible,
Adidas.
Just disgusting Vegas Golden Knights jerseys.
So this continues a trend, right? Because we are – so as a show unit, we are voting no to Golden Knights as their official mascot, right? Like we would have come up with – we like a lot of different names better. Blackjacks.
I'm on board with it.
I like the Blackjacks. You're on board with Golden Knights.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Knights, so not only is it –
Knights would have been okay to me. Golden Knights.
I'd have been okay with Knights. Golden Knights is already another major powerhouse program in this country, and that's, of course, the University of Central Florida.
Oh, I understand. My thing is the NHL obviously can't have nice things, so the fact that they call their new team in Vegas after Central Florida's mascot is hilarious to me. So, yes, that's why.
Again, our audience needs to try to parse out what exactly Julian Council means when he says anything, and that is – he's on board with it because it's so bad.
Right.
Okay, so now that we've got that and cleared up and that all the humans in the city in Nashville are trying to regain their consciousness here. We do not like the name. Anything would have been cooler. Craps, blackjacks, mafia, hitmen, whatever you want to call it. I think it would have been better.
Aces.
You're in Vegas. Lean in. I think you've got to lean into it. We've discussed this many times. So we don't like that, right? What about the logo? Are you on board with the logo? If you're going to go Golden Knights, I don't mind the logo itself, like the center of the sweater, just kind of the mask of the knight.
I mean, the logo looked to me like it was from, like, I don't know, late 90s computer. Like, if you built your own franchise on a game, you'd be like, ooh, I'll take that cheesy.
So you could have made it a little more flair, like the goaltender masks that were at the NHL All-Star event last night, like a Game of Thrones mask. That would have been cool. I agree with that. So basically, you don't like the nickname. This is your hometown, by the way.
Right.
You don't like the nickname. You don't like the logo. And now the uniform is awful.
Well, and you know,
it's the sweater.
And when they eliminated Loss from the name, so it's just the Vegas Golden Knights, I was like, oh, okay, whatever. You know,
does that make it easier to?
I guess they're just thinking it makes it easier to say,
I like that.
The Vegas Golden Knights. So I was like, okay. But over time, I've been like, you know what? It's the first professional franchise in Vegas. I'll just get a shirt or something. I want to support my hometown getting their first professional franchise. And then the jerseys came out last night, and they're disgusting. They're awful.
So it sounds like you need to put together like a vintage Vegas Knights clothing line that's all like 1970s stuff. That's like that's a total throwback that no one knew existed. You can be like, I was a fan back in the 70s.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, like it's a totally different logo, totally different name, totally different everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's this weird, like, it's gray and that's fine, but then there's this weird, like, I don't want to call it yellow. I don't know what it is.
And then there's red.
Yeah, there's like weird, and it's not a normal red.
Well, it would
either.
Be a golden knight. I mean, yeah. But they can't take that. Like,
but it's not gold, and it's not really yellow.
Though,
it's like,
even though their gold might be more gold than our gold is.
Well, either way, it's
actual,
you know,
gold.
It's ugly gold, is what it is.
Yeah, it's not a pretty gold.
And it's then, a reminder of why we don't have regular gold on our jerseys, because, you know, in neon. Neon gold is better at that point. It just looks dull.
Vegas gold.
It's dull and lifeless, and in a city full of
dull,
you know,
and lifeless. Oh,
I mean, sorry. It's like you got lights everywhere. You got neon everywhere. You got bright lights, big city, and then you have that. And it looks like
what? You know what it looks like? It looks like all the crushed dreams that are laying in the gutter. Is what it looks like. That's what happens when you go to Vegas. Is your dreams end up either getting handed to a dealer or falling into a gutter on the side of the road somewhere.
Yeah, it looks to me like it belongs at the Excalibur, which, if you've ever been to Vegas, is not the nicest hotel, and it's got that same night feel. It's just terrible. So let me get your thoughts. James Neal, unprotected, and obviously Cali protected. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's funny. I think I want to say we were the first show that mentioned that, you know, months ago that there's a chance that James Neal was going to be unprotected. I want to say we were on the front end of that, and a lot of that Robbie Stanley gets credit for. I think he's the one who sort of first floated that idea with us, and we started thinking about it, and my first reaction was, okay, they're going to have to work a big deal to keep him. That was my first reaction. The second reaction was, and then kind of jokingly I was channeling my inner Julian Council, like, oh, how great would it be if they let him walk, and then after the season, he re-signs with Nashville. Like, that was my first, oh, the Preds can just go re-sign him after this 1 year, and he'll just be gone for 1 year, and he'll come back and play three or four more seasons for the Preds, and all will be great, and they won't actually will have lost anybody for other than the 1 year. And I thought that was kind of, all right, that would be a great kind of, not troll move, but, like, that would be a great way to sort of execute. But really, it seems like James Neal's biggest value is as a trade chip, a trade commodity, and if you're George McPhee and the Vegas Knights, you're trying to build through the draft with as many pieces as possible. It seems less and less likely to me as time has gone by since the announcement that they're going to be, the Predators are going to be able to keep him. Now the good news on all of that is that you don't screw up your center position. That's the good news, is that if Colton Sissons is taken and he's the guy picked, you sort of have a bigger issue at hand, which is A, you got to re-sign James Neal, but more importantly, what's going to happen with Mike Fisher? Is he going to re-sign? If he doesn't re-sign, then you're looking at what your center position could look like at that point would be Ryan Johansson, Cali Yarncroft, Colton Sissons, and Freddie Goudreau. That would be your center position going into next year, and that ain't good enough to win the Cup. So they would have to address that position in some capacity. David Poile has said as much. So I've kind of swung – I've kind of had a lot of different mixed emotions about it. I think now I'm at the point where he's in, you know, what, 10th season in the NHL going into, had one of his worst seasons, going to cost a ton of money. It makes more and more sense to me the more and more time goes by with it. Cali is such a versatile player, two-way player. I don't think he's a star ever, but he's under contract for $2 million a year for 5 years. I think there's a lot to like about keeping Cali Yarncroak. So I think that two career years basically for him, if he can build on that, then I think 19 is a valuable commodity. So I think there's something to be said for the way that they worked, and this has sort of reached the point where I just trust David Poile, and I think that my initial reaction was, oh, okay, and now I'm kind of like, all right. So that's where I've changed.
Benefit of the doubt. It's the reason that we have to give Poile some trust in how he's handling it, because obviously as much praise as we gave him last year, we can't give him praise and not give him benefit.
And it takes $5 million off the books this year, and it keeps you from having to sign a huge contract next year, and you may be able to use that money to go get a winger who might be better than James Neal. And we've talked about TJ Oshie. It's a long shot that they're going to go get him, and it's a long shot that they're going to be a big spender in free agency. But they've said they're going to – David Poile yesterday says, I'm going to go out and get a couple of forwards. So ideally a centerman is one of them. And the other one, if you go spend $5 million on somebody, you're probably going to get somebody nearly as good as James Neal. So I think they're still in a pretty good position. They were going to lose a good player. I mean, that's the bottom line. You can't put an expansion team together and not have everybody sort of lose a good player. Unless you're Colorado or some of the bad teams, they don't have any good players.
Well, as the show goes on, we'll get your thoughts on Decker. But there's big news out of Knoxville. We need to get into that. We need to break down what it means, not just for football, but for the university as a whole. We will do that next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. You're listening to Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big news out of Knoxville yesterday. Big, big news out of Knoxville, and I don't think unexpected news to some, but key news to many when you see this, because Philip Fulmer has been brought in to the university. They're bringing him in as sort of like an advisory role, let's say it that way, either paying him $100,000 a month to be essentially a guy that can help sell the franchise, sell the program, be around the program, and grow the program. So he's coming in. They're bringing him into the fold, essentially. They're finding a way and a position to bring him into the fold.
This was a big campfire kumbaya moment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this is. So he's brought on as a special advisor, announced in the press conference, and absolutely no animosity is the quote between himself and athletic director John Curry. I think what this shows me, I'm a big believer in balance and stability in athletic department, and what that means. So I'm going to use the University of Texas as an example, another UT as an example of this. When Charlie Strong was hired, there was a lot of divide because there's lots of players at stake here, right? There's major big time boosters that spend lots of money to have control, right? They want to pull strings. And they spend lots of money to do it. There are athletic directors and heads of state within the athletic department that all think different things. You know, everybody's got their own unique ideas about how things should be run. And at Texas, they had a sort of a cancerous athletic director with a booster group that was totally divided. And we can get into long, long discussions about why that group was divided and a lot of reasons that are just really, really stupid. But everybody was divided about Charlie Strong. Everyone was divided about that tenure. Everyone didn't like the athletic director, all these things that were going on. Well, the athletic director was removed. The head coach eventually was let go, and I think Charlie Strong landed in a nice spot at University of South Florida, USF. He can go recruit Florida. I think he's going to do a great job there. When they hired Tom Herman, it aligned everybody. It got all the boosters, all the fans, all the new athletic director, all the administration. Everybody is now pulling in the same exact direction on the same tug-of-war rope, right? Like, they're all pulling on the Texas side of the rope now. So I think that's my analogy for what is happening now with Philip Fulmer. It doesn't run maybe as deep and as complicated as Texas, but you've got a coach right now that is sort of creating a divide amongst the big-time boosters. Most boosters are like, you need to win now. Most fans are like, you need to win now. And there's some people that have said, hey, let's give him a chance. This guy's done a lot to rebuild this program. And there are now articles out there that are basically saying, hey, this guy's, you know, we need to give more credit to Butch Jones for what he's done. We don't know what he's going to do, and that's a major question. But to me, to have Philip Fulmer and John Curry and the administration, all the athletic department, all the boosters, everybody sort of this sort of like mends all the fences, and it gets everybody pulling in the same direction. And I think that's really important for football success. It doesn't lead directly to wins, but it makes it so much easier to run a football program when everybody is pulling in the same direction. And I think this sort of unifies some people, and it kind of brings people into the same – they're all tugging on the same side of the Tennessee rope now in the tug of war in college football, if that makes any sense. It doesn't lead to – hey, they're not. It doesn't mean they're going to make that field goal or get that third down or win that game, but what it does is it makes every other aspect of Butch Jones's life much easier, and he can focus on football because now the entire administration is pulling in the same direction. I think that's important.
I think that's also a little moment to credit Beverly Davenport. I mean, you bring in a chancellor that came in under a lot of scrutiny. Let's say it this way, a lot of expectations of what that first athletic director was going to look like. So with all of the expectations of what that first athletic director hire would be or how that would play out, I think that obviously she had to fight a little bit of a popularity war from the time she was hired, because there's a fine line between hiring who everybody thinks you should hire and hiring who you think you should hire. So it's an interesting.
I love Peyton Manning.
Thank you, Julian. That is the best thing you have done in 6 months working for us. Oh my God, that's spectacular.
So Beverly Davenport comes in, and she sort of she's part
I
of what
I love Peyton Manning.
She gets the worlds to align, right? I mean, that's what her function is. You look at it and say, what was the best case scenario out of a chancellor hire from an athletic fan standpoint? It's that everybody would sort of get kumbaya together and everybody would work together. That's what she's done.
Well, and we suggested it at the time, and now it might have been David Blackburn instead of John Curry, but whatever. You know, maybe John Curry certainly way more experienced as a high-level Power 5 athletic director than David Blackburn is, but the point was, I don't want to see Philip Fulmer as the athletic director. I want to see him as like a consigliere. I want him as like a number two, an advisor that essentially is there to raise. He's going to raise tons of money. He's going to be spectacular in that fashion, and he's perfect in that role. He's great in that role, and I think having him with a business, because now you've got the football guy, right? Like you've got a football guy in there that knows the program, the ins and outs of running a program. An actual football program, and then you've got John Curry, who's much more of the business side of things with the development of facilities and fundraising and running essentially a $150 million corporation. That's what they've got. That's what he does. I think you've got the best of both worlds now. And again, if they're all in line and all the words that all the things that they're saying about each other, the kumbaya moment, all this stuff you're talking about, if it's all true, then they're all pulling in the same direction. And what that does is it gives Butch Jones the best chance to succeed. It doesn't mean he's going to succeed. It means that everybody is pulling in the same direction and that Butch Jones has all the positive momentum and flow that he needs. It doesn't mean he's the coach to get Tennessee over the hump or to win the SEC or, you know, to win the East or whatever. That still could be a major issue. But the point is that everybody's now aligned. And once everybody's aligned, I think you're going to see it at Texas this year. I think Texas is going to be good very quickly because everybody sort of has fallen in place. I think that's something that could very much be a part of Butch Jones's next few years, again, unless he's just not the guy and just can't coach past a certain level of accomplishment.
Also, dream scenario, Butch Jones gets pushed out midseason. Philip Fulmer becomes the interim, and it all comes full circle.
Oh, good Lord. That would be great for our show. I mean, that would just – we'd show up every day and just say, Tennessee, and then you guys would call the phone lines for four hours. I think this, like,
I'm not sure it'd be the best thing for Tennessee football, but it would be fun for us.
It'd be entertaining. I think there's a real life application to this where people work better and you work more confidently, let's say it that way, when you feel like the people around you that you need to be fighting for you are fighting for you. And so in this process, it can allow for Butch to feel like, okay, I can go to, if I'm not getting. If I'm not being heard by John Curry, then I can go over here to Philip Fulmer and I can plead my case. And you've got a lot of people there that you feel like are going to fight for you, whether that's because you need equipment or whether that's because you need administrative needs, whatever it might be. There's just sort of a security that comes when you walk into whether you
sounding
work,
board too. Yeah,
absolutely. Sounding board. When you have a great trust relationship with the people around you in any work environment, whether it's at a financial company or whether it's at a radio station or whether it's on a football team, when you feel like you can go to everybody, have a lot of minds work together and then have people that will fight for you, it just gives you your chest puffs out a little
bit. And let's be honest, I think Phil Fulmer reached out to Butch Jones and developed that relationship, and he was the first coach to do for Phil Fulmer to do that with. He did not reach. I mean, obviously the Lane Kiffin thing was too new and fresh. He just got let go and all that stuff. I think the Lane Kiffin thing was there's no way he was going to reach out and build a relationship with Lane Kiffin. That's just not going to happen. And I don't think Derek Dooley did it either. So he sort of mended the Philip Fulmer and the head coach fence on his own when he sort of built that relationship with Butch Jones early in Butch Jones's tenure. So that they have a working relationship and they've been, you know, they've had some interaction and friendship for a while now. Now it's more of an official capacity, and I think that's good for everybody. Again, everybody pulling in the same direction, I think, gives Butch Jones the best opportunities to succeed. It doesn't mean he's going to succeed. It just means he's got the best situation now.
Well, it also gives everybody sort of their little safety blanket. Everybody has a little bit more comfort this morning. We'll keep breaking down what that means for you guys and what it means for Vols fans in general. We'll do that next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. And we're breaking down a little bit of the Philip Fulmer news. Should say that we've looked it up, and first reports that I saw were incorrect. Fulmer is going to make $100,000 a year. So that was incorrectly reported initially. He'll make $100,000 a year as a part-time employee. And then he will have an expense allotment that equals out to an extra $30,000 a year.
I'd like to have a $30,000 a year expense allotment.
I'd like to have a $100,000 a year part-time job. That's pretty awesome. I mean, that's fantastic work.
Yeah, that's $8,300 a month, folks.
So, you know, it's funny because this is – I'll give Julian credit for the way he wrote this as we were writing out our topics this morning. I think it's Julian that wrote it. It may have been you that said
– Nope, it was me. Yeah.
No, I haven't done any work for you guys Julian, in like a week.
Julian wrote this morning, and it's really well said. Fulmer is the new Spurrier, and there's sort of this ad pitch sort of there's a platform to Fulmer as a person, and there's a platform in this capacity that's going to allow him, when he goes on TV, to be even more of a sales pitch for the university than he has been.
First of all, no one will ever be the new Spurrier. Let's be very clear about that.
But in terms of the advisory
Spurrier, because Spurrier then comes back to Florida, of course. I think a lot of people don't know that Spurrier is working at Florida right now, back at his old alma mater and old stomping grounds.
But that's even better if you don't know, because that's proof to what I'm talking about, because he's up on College Game Day all the time wearing a Florida shirt and a Florida pin, and he's up there just talking about football. But the whole time you're thinking back and you're like, man, Spurrier, Florida. It's an advertisement.
It's all the good feels. There's nostalgia there, and you know, you're like, oh, I remember when Tennessee was good, and it was Fulmer that was a part of that, and so I think it is a great move for the university to have him on board, and I think it's, as I said, all the things we just said last segment, great sounding board for the head coach. I think things are starting to fall into place where, there's been a couple of columns out there pointing out how good of a job, and we had Mike Griffith last week that was, hey, I don't know why Butch Jones isn't getting more credit for what he's accomplished at Tennessee. It doesn't mean that expectations aren't high this year and that he may not meet those expectations. That's one part of this discussion. The other part of this discussion is, let's really actually look at the last 4 years and see where Tennessee was and see where Tennessee is today. And they're in a totally different situation. New chancellor, new athletic director. Now you've got Fulmer back in the fold. Sort of you've rebuilt that relationship and brought him back. The roster has been totally rebuilt. And he's right now, only Nick Saban has more wins in the last 3 years in the SEC than Butch Jones does, which is crazy. So there is where we've reached the point now where we've had these discussions and arguments about upside, right? About Butch Jones, what is the upside for him? Can he take this program to the next level? Is he a championship level coach, or does he just want to be a walking robotic cliche? And we're sort of now in the situation where there are really no more excuses. It's not necessarily about this current roster and this current season, but if he, like, everything is in place from a stability standpoint, athletic department standpoint, the fans. I mean, everything is sort of in place now that the next step is the expectation. It doesn't mean it's fair this year because of the current roster, but it means that the next step needs to happen very quickly. And if the next step doesn't happen very quickly, then we sort of are at the point where there's really no more excuses. It is just, you know what, coach, you've done a great job rebuilding this program. Your job was to rebuild this program. It may not be to take this team to the next level.
Speaking of Fulmer, he was on yesterday with Ryan McGee, who was sitting in co-hosting with Feinbaum. McGee going to join us from ESPN at 8 a.m. this morning. So we'll get some of his thoughts on Coach. And you just mentioned sort of stability and moving forward. And I think that's one of the big differences when you try and examine, okay, what's the difference between the Vols this year, the Vols last year? And one of the big differences around the school in general is that there is stability. And when you talk about what that means, it means something, I believe. And also, when you talk about what Philip Fulmer means in this advisory role, there's respect to the football mind there and the process. And coaches respect coaches. That's one of the things that I think you know as well, being around so many coaches, how often, you know, coaches refer to each other as coach. Like, none of them have a first name. You know, they all respect each other's brains and time around the game and knowledge and passion for the game. So when you have somebody like Butch Jones, who's going into a year where in some situations the hot seat could be very loud, it could be very rabid, it could be the story. He has to feel like having a buffer like Philip Fulmer that is a coach, has been a coach, that understands coaching, that Philip Fulmer is going to better understand the situation that Butch feels like he's in this year. It's got to make everybody a little bit more comfortable. And I believe that when you're more comfortable in that situation, you can better excel. I think that all comes back to the stability.
I mean, you could go to the Preds analogy if you want to. I mean, it's that there when an entire locker room feels unified, how much easier is it to play winning hockey? Well, that's what happened at the end of the year. The locker room came together. It happened at the middle of the season, and then it sort of grew from there, and it got to the point where this team was good enough to get to the Stanley Cup final. I think when there is sort of, you know, a unification, and when instead of the locker room, we're talking about the front office in this situation, when there's a unification of all of that, because there was obviously a very scathing article that came out at the end of last season that sort of highlighted all the dysfunction in and around the program, where a lot of those names are now gone. It doesn't mean that Butch Jones is the answer. It doesn't mean any of that. What it means is the situation is set up for him to be, for us to find out if he's the answer or not. You cannot use, oh, there's an outgoing athletic director as an excuse now. You cannot use, there's instability with this, or, oh, the relationship with Philip Fulmer has been fractured and we don't know, you know, that you can't use any more of that. All of that stuff has been ironed out. And now it's strictly about, all right, develop your quarterback, keep your defensive line healthy. And I really do think if those two things happen, which is huge if the defensive line stays healthy and the quarterback situation is stable and there's a good player out of those two, which I think there can be, then I think you've got a really good shot to win the division. We don't know about Florida. We don't know about Georgia. We've talked about it. You can throw a dart at any of those three teams. If he were to win the division this year, sort of not picked to do so, but then goes out and does it, and everything else sort of feels like it's been ironed out in the athletic department and in the power structure – he's going to build a lot of clout for himself very quickly. He also could, you know, like you said, the hot seat could be unbelievably hot by the end of November. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, before they even get to the end of the season.
I think the interesting part of all of this is you mentioned no more excuses, and that's really the part that I think has everybody encouraged. Think back to the Titans, and I realize winning fixed their problems. But the conversation around the Titans a few years ago was all about the dysfunction at the top and who's the general manager, who's the team president, who's owning the team. I mean, every conversation you could possibly
have.
Yeah,
this NFL lawsuit thing where, like, the NFL and the ownership group are at odds, that's sort of disappeared a little bit, hasn't it?
It's amazing how the NFL really wants just to bury that and not have that even be a story when the team's actually good.
Mm-hmm.
But it took sort of that winning cured that. I think that the Vols took the opposite stance. They went in and said, okay, we have a problem. We're going to fix it.
We got to fix it.
And that's what they've done. And they fixed it by bringing in somebody in Beverly Davenport that obviously has come in with a mindset on how can I right this ship.
I love Peyton Manning.
How can I stabilize this organization? And that's what she's done. And Philip Fulmer coming in, even if he's just a cheerleader, even if he's just that guy, he does that. He has that stabilizing effect.
We actually have audio of the conversation between Beverly Davenport and Philip Fulmer. Philip Fulmer said, hey.
I love.
Go ahead.
It's okay.
Trigger happy.
It's okay. Philip Fulmer asked her, like, what she thought of the history of Tennessee football. And
I love Peyton Manning.
I mean, that's he's got a little trigger happy there, Julian. That that is
fantastic. I was ready to play it. I wanted to play it.
You want to play it again?
I love Peyton Manning.
I mean, that's what this comes down to. Let's just hire him next. I mean, they'll find some role for Peyton, and then everybody will
be
happy.
Where did Beverly Davenport stand on the Colts-Patriots rivalry over the last 10 years?
I love Peyton Manning.
Pretty clear. She's made it pretty clear.
Yeah.
Where she stands.
That's and Fulmer harkens back to that whole era for everybody. And like I said, all they could do now is just add Peyton himself, and then everybody will just be over heels in love. And
My God.
And it'd be perfection.
Well, they're offering like his son, right? Like his eighth grade son or something.
So
like
did
that.
Lane.
Yeah, they keep trying to get T to come. He just doesn't want to, and T doesn't want to come because he knows one thing
Mrs.
about Beverly Davenport. T Martin knows
it's
this.
True. It's true.
He knows. He's like, Beverly, do you like me? What do you think, Beverly?
I love Peyton Manning.
That's a good point.
That's why T's not here.
It's a good point.
John. Oh, God. I don't know where we went off the rails with that.
That's because Mrs. T likes L.A.
Oh, that is. I can't blame her one bit for that. I know, like I always say, if I told my wife, hey, honey, we could live in L.A. or Knoxville.
Is that a Bloody Mary mix, Mrs. T?
It should be. If it isn't,
Mrs.
it should
T's
be.
Or Mr. T's? Mr. and Mrs. T's?
I don't know.
Mr. T is the guy from
I Pity the Fool.
No, I know. A-Team. Don't you dare disrespect the A-Team.
Almost forgot.
Oh, my God. Okay, coming up next, obviously the expansion draft happens tonight. The expansion draft is here. Unfortunately, guys, as much as you want this to play out a certain way, you can't control it, and I don't think it's going to happen the way you want it to. We'll break it down next. We'll tell you what their plan is. We'll do all of that. I'm Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.